The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is John Silver, lead recruiter of the Dark Order, and you are listening to All Things Elite.
Welcome to the 150th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Summons, and I am the host of this lovely show. Joining with me, as always, is my good buddy and friend and fellow Ticketmaster hater, Floyd Johnson Jr., my man. How are you doing after today?
So, I will tell you, from about 11 a.m. Eastern to about 6 p.m. Eastern, you probably got your grumpiest Floyd. That's about how long it took me to get over what happened.
Yeah, so we'll get into that real quick, honestly, even before the whole spiel about us promoting shit. Forbidden Dance went on pre-sale today, and that shit went gone quick. It went gone.
Yes. So the white males came out for their show.
Yes, the no females at all. The niche only male wrestling fans came out. My sister doesn't exist, apparently.
Oh my God! It was just like when I read that, and like I have a well-natured, well-set-up timeline. So because I don't block. I mute. Like, you just don't exist. I don't block.
Yeah,
so
you scream in the void.
I keep them followed so I can make sure they're muted, and, you know, and I don't see what they say. Well, there was this one, and I kept seeing retweets where people were yelling at something, but I couldn't see the message.
Of course.
Because I was muted. And so I had to unmute it. And I read it, and I was like, well, isn't this like the dumbest thing that I've ever heard? Like, literally, if I'm never going to list... But if I want to talk about the most hardcore professional wrestling fans I know, Mary-Kate Anthony and Issa, I would put those two people up against any man, any person in the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God! I mean, literally, like, like I'll build up my sister on that regard too. I mean, Sydney. For all of these meet and greets and all these shows, when All In first happened, and like we were thinking about doing, like, me, my friend Chad, and we were thinking about doing our podcast at Starcast for Podcast Row, Sydney went fucking ham to make sure that happened. That would not have happened for me and Chad if it wasn't for her. Like, she made that happen. She was the one that made that whole thing happen for me and my friend Chad. So, like, and then, like, when AEW was really going, I mean, she was locked in every single week. And, like, dude, like, people will spin their narratives about anything right now. Like, seriously, it's just, like, it's funny as hell, but it's pretty predictable, honestly. It's, like, their first line was, AEW can't sell at the United Center. They can't sell an arena like that. They did off of a rumor for CM Punk. And then they're like, well, they can't sell it out twice. And then they did. And then now the theory is like, oh, it was all the hardcore, predominantly male people that came out and bought it. Or it's like, oh, it was all scalpers. Or, oh, they only sold out the pre-sale. You still got like 10,000 seats you got to sell. And I'm just like, motherfucker, like, get a life. Like, people are enjoying this shit, and you just gotta find a way to just dig at it. And it's like, you're finding nothing. You are grasping at the smallest straws that you can find and being like, guys, look at what I have to say. It's important.
Man, some people just think, I mean, some people do this for a living. They do this. This is their livelihood. So even when, even when they don't have anything to say, they still feel the need to say something. What happens then is you end up saying something in unintelligent because you are not informed. You don't have enough of a circle. That's the one thing I'll say about me and my friends. My friends in my group, the Social Suplex group on Facebook, we all have a vast amount of friends. We have white friends. We have women. We have, you know, all the different races, all the different sexes. We have
sexual orientation, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we have a lot of different friends. So we speak to everyone. And because of that, it's not like it's not a survey or anything. It's not official. But you can get an idea of excitement, right? People I know that I would consider the most casual of casual wrestling fans, right? We're saying, I'm going to try to get tickets. Women, men, people that like, I haven't been to a show, wrestling show in 3 years, were saying, well, I'm going to get on and see if I can get tickets. So when I said on this show that it was going to be an all-in type of feel when it came to tickets, I took that based on my experience communicating with people. I had seen a buzz and excitement of people that wanted to get tickets, and I knew it was going to sell out. What was our question on the show? It wasn't, was it going to sell out? It was either, was it going to sell out in under 30 minutes or was it going to sell out in over 30 minutes? That was the question.
And it was in the ballpark of around 30 to 40.
The only reason it took 30 minutes is because that's how long it took to process the orders.
Pretty much.
Those
but
tickets
no.
were gone.
Yeah. But going back to Floyd's anger, though, we're gonna sit on this for a little bit. So we can confirm, yes, me, Floyd, my sister, Sydney, anybody else that you want to confirm that did get tickets that you want to shout out real quick?
So I was going to say you. But me and my boy Tyler are going together. There are a few at Shining Polaris on Twitter. Her name's Christine. She's got tickets. Amy and Andy, Amy Nemedy and Andy Nemedy, they got tickets. I think they actually got floor seats. So shout
fucking
out
to the, goddamn.
Most shout out to the Lucha Professor, JR. So it was me, Tyler, and JR all trying to get in, and JR actually got in and made the purchase and got us the tickets. He got through first. Shout out to JR. Shout out to Tyler for being, he took his break at work so he could get this done. It's a team effort, because I literally, when I got through, I was plus 2,000.
Yeah, no, when I got into the queue, I was about like 1,800, I want to say, maybe 1,700. Sydney was plus 2,000 for about like 20, 30 minutes. Like, she took forever to get in, so it was on me. I had to settle for upper bowl. Like, we got row two, though, and it's pretty close to, like where Floyd is sitting. We're, like over top of him, pretty much, in row two for the upper bowl. So they're not bad seats, honestly, and I'm very happy that we were able to pull it. Honestly, I don't even care.
I think they released – I don't think that section was initially released, the 121. And then they released it somehow because we got like 10th row in that section. So I think they released it after you purchased your tickets, because
yeah,
you had said I got my tickets, and at that point in time I didn't have tickets yet.
Yeah, I mean, we basically, like, the first thing that I could get, which was that, we were just like, let's do it, we got to do it, because I mean, like, that was my whole thing. Like, for All In, I had to call the arena in order to get tickets, and then they were upper bowl, so like, we were just like, we got to just get it, dude. Like, whatever we get at this point. But That was how we worked out, though. We were able to get him, though. But Floyd himself.
Yeah, my
angry, grumpy Floyd. How did the experience go for you before we get all of our plugs in and everything?
So I made sure not to go to Ticketmaster, because the last time I had a bit of a ticket problem was because that it said that, you know, it hadn't recognized my IP. So what I did is I flushed my DNS. I restarted my computer. That's computer talk. I sat there. I went to sleep because, you know, and I got up. And I go straight to Ticketmaster. I sign in, get in the queue. I know that the queue to get tickets opens up about 15 minutes before the show. So around 15:30, I start refreshing. I refresh. I get in the queue pretty much like a few seconds after it opens, right? Tell my other friends to get in the queue. They get in the queue after me. After me. I'm telling you. They get in the queue after me, right? So I'm like, okay. I don't know if I'm going to get in first. I don't know how the system works. But I've done everything I can to get in the front of the queue. We're all on the phone. And then it goes, doo-doo-doo. You know, the little beep when it's saying that time is going. It says, waiting to put you in the queue. My other two friends already have a number, and their number's going down. It hasn't even put me in the queue yet. The number pops up, plus 2,000. And it stayed that way for 14 minutes. and it was like, everybody's like, what code did you use? I was like, it didn't matter. By the time I got through, it was sold out. You know? It was effectively sold out by the time I got in. You know, I know they didn't announce it to 30 or 40 minutes, but it was only 300 sections. You know, it was like, and I'm one of those people. I'm a little spoiled. I admit it. Say what you want about me. If you came to the 300 section, I'm not flying to sit in the 300s, damn it. I live in Oklahoma. I will throw a party, and I will have everybody come over to my house. I will feed you, and we will watch the pay-per-view together. I'm not. So we just kept refreshing until we got 121. Dude, I almost bought platinum seats. I almost spent $1,200 for about three sections over and about five rows difference.
God damn.
I was going to be in that show, and I was going to be in the section I wanted to be in. I then got those tickets, and when I got through, I sat there refreshing for 30 minutes, hoping somebody's payment may have not have gotten through, and I may have even got another ticket. No such luck. I've had luck in the past doing that, but no such luck. No matches announced. This show's happening. That's it. I mean, no company has been able to do this in history before. WWE was the company.
And yeah, that was the only
one. WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. They just put those tickets on sale, and they'd sell 20 or 30,000 just because of the event. AEW has come in, and pretty much their product is they sell out their shows before a single match is announced.
Mm-hmm.
We got our first announced match for Double or Nothing 2 weeks ago or something. Maybe a week ago, already sold out. We're not going to get a match for this until like June, because I think they want a Double or Nothing to happen, and NJPW has a show that happens on June 12th. So it might be 14 days before we get a show as exactly what this show is announced. It's sold out. Anybody that says AEW is not growing. Oh, okay. Hey, let me give it to you. Okay, it's not growing. I don't believe that. Air quotes all the way. But their fan base is so passionate. that these 800 to 1,000 to a million people that they get every week are going to keep them in business for 20 years.
Yeah.
Because that 800,000 people is as passionate about AEW as any football team's fan base is passionate about their team.
And that's what I've been saying, too, for the people that are all like, when are they going to get casual fans? Motherfucker, they can survive off of the people that they have right now that are this hardcore. Like, that's the biggest thing. When you're a new company, your hardcore fans are the most important thing. The casuals will come because of the hardcore fans that will tell them about this. That's how this shit works. You can't just be focused on the casuals because you're taking a WWE problem and you're stamping it on AEW when the two companies aren't even in the same situations. AEW is trying to grow and build themselves as a new, young company. WWE is trying to grow as the conglomerate of pro wrestling and sports entertainment that they are, because at this point, they've pretty much hit their peak for what hardcore fans they're going to have. So casuals is really all they can bring in at this point. So you're taking situations and you're trying to band-aid the solution of like, oh, this is what AEW needs to do. No, they are completely fine selling out the United Center for the second time in less than a year. CM Punk debuted less than a year ago at the United Center, and they sold it out. And now, less than a year later, they've already sold out the United Center, arguably the second biggest arena in the country, twice. That's insane. And for any other company that wasn't WWE at this point in time, if any other company other than WWE did this like years ago, that would be insane. And it is the same case now. Now, it's an awesome thing. If you still prefer WWE, that's fine. But if you're trying to like pick apart and like be like, oh, well, this is bullshit, or oh, they did this only because of this, and you're trying to cherry pick and make bad take arguments and stuff like that and be like, oh, they're going to crash and burn or anything like that, you're trying to see like a company die and you're like, you're actively cheering its downfall. And like, listen, I'm not cheering the downfall of WWE. I want them to be good. I want wrestling to be good. If you're just cheering for the downfall of a company at this point, like, get a fucking life, dude. It's wrestling.
Samoa Joe said on a tweet that this AEW versus WWE is stupid. Just watch pro wrestling. And
it's an ego thing.
Yeah. And I always say this. I always said this on the show. I've said this on Twitter. I've said this to anyone that will listen to me. My first love before anyone, before AEW, before Tony Khan was born, was pro wrestling. That's my love. That is what I love. No wrestler, no entity, no company, excuse me, is bigger than pro wrestling in my mind. Cody has said that exact thing. It's no one's bigger than pro wrestling. When my favorite wrestler retires, I will move on to another favorite wrestler. When a company that I love goes out of business, I will start watching another company. If no companies are on TV, I will be down every week at my VFW hall or my bingo hall watching or calling wrestling. I am never going to not watch pro wrestling. Until the day I get Alzheimer's and forget I exist, I will be watching pro wrestling. The people I know in my life feel the same way. Yes. I am more entertained by AEW on a weekly basis right now than WWE. Yes. That could flip. I don't see it happening, but it could flip. I am open to the idea of it flipping. Because I just love pro wrestling. The whole tribalism thing is dumb.
Yeah, I mean, again, you can have favorite companies. You can have favorite wrestlers.
Just like I hate favorite team. But Austin, I root for the Chiefs, and Austin roots for the Lions. I give him shit because it's fun, but nothing wrong with Austin rooting for the Lions.
Yeah, obviously, like, you have rivals, and, like, with sports, it's a lot more different with rival teams because, like, that's a rivalry that, like, is meant to be, like, fuck you. Like, that's how it goes. But, like – I don't wish any bad feelings towards like Packers fans. I laugh when they lose because like that's what I do. But like, I don't care if you're a Packers fan at the end of the day. That's not going to change like the way that I talk to you or anything like that. It's just going to be, I'm going to bust your balls a little bit. That's what it is. It's friendly ball breaking that it is. And like, I can do that with WWE fans, AEW fans, like Impact fans. Like, we're just enjoying what we enjoy. And then like, we're busting each other's balls because we're friends at the end of the day because we like the same thing just differently. That's how it goes. So please, so the people that are just being like, they're going to crash and burn. Oh, the only reason they sold out the United Center was because of this. Or, oh, they didn't technically sell out. It all went to scalpers. Or, oh, this bullshit reason that I'm convincing myself. Get a fucking life, please, for everyone's sake.
Believe me. I mean, AEW scalping didn't start with AEW's product.
No, it's not. It's not something that only existed, and it's not something that doesn't already happen with WWE shows. Oh, trust God, me. For yes. people, for people who have tried to buy WrestleMania tickets, it is a thing that has existed in other wrestling. I promise you.
Yeah, people act like, AEW like in Tony Khan invented scalpers. Like, dude, I live in Oklahoma City, you know, the smallest big town ever, right? You know, as soon as the Thunder got here, it became a job. People mm-hmm. either moved here or they were down the corner and their livelihood was based on scalping. When COVID hit and no games were happening, scalpers were out of job. That was a big group.
Good.
They were without a job. It's just like it's a part of it. And it's mm-hmm. like, honestly, if fans collectively, as a fan, I know there'd never be a fan union, but fans collectively say, I'm not paying anything more than ticket value, scalpers would go out of business.
Yeah, but there are going to be people that want to buy them because,
there are people like me. I want to go.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're charging three times the ticket. Well, at least you're not charging six times the ticket like that one guy. So here's some money.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. I'm a part of the problem.
It is what it is.
I know, but like, it's just like some people are afraid to say that. I know I'm a part of the problem. I know when I drop $500 on a $100 ticket, yeah, I'm telling that person to keep doing it. Sorry. I want to go more than my principles at that point. I just
want to be there.
I'm glad I'm in the building, and I'm glad I didn't have to pay more than face value. You know, I'm in the building. It's great. Yeah.
But you were Grumpy Floyd for a bit.
Oh, no, I was grumpy because of the tickets I got. I wanted to be on the floor, and yeah. I didn't necessarily like it. Wasn't like first three, four rows. I wanted to get as close as possible, but I would have took 10th row floor. I wanted to be on the floor. And it was just something about it. And honestly, you know where it comes from? I wasn't on the floor for All In. You know what I mean? It
was, yeah.
This feels like All In.
I will say this will be the last thing before we wrap up and this little conversation and get into the actual Dynamite review of the show. But like when we bought, like I said, because I called in to the arena to buy our tickets for All In, and then I can't even remember this. Like Cindy had some sort of online friend that she made for like that time frame only, because I don't think she's talked to this person anymore. But this person would like literally had opening seats next to him on the floor, like for All In, and just gave them to Sydney, like two seats for floor for her birthday. And I was like, what the fuck? So what we did was, because our friend Chad was going with us, we had those two seats up in the upper bowl, actually. So what we did was we had one of us sit up top for half the show, and then the other person sat on the floor for the half of the show. We would switch. And then at halfway point, we switched pretty much after Cody won the NWA title. And then Sydney would stay down on the floor for the entire show. That's how that went. And yeah, it's an experience definitely for a show of that magnitude, to be honest.
I did that with JR because we got like five tickets and he really wanted to see the Lucha Bros versus the Young Bucks. So we switched spots so he could be there when the Lucha Bros won the tag team belts. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like, it was amazing, and I'm glad he got to experience that. And it's just like when you have people that work as a team like that, that is beautiful. I remember All In, I ended up with 11 tickets before. I was just calling around, seeing who had extras, hustling and bustling. I had 11 tickets, and I think we had 8 of us in our group. I sold 2 to a person face value because I'm not a dick. And we were in line for Kenny Omega at Pro Wrestling Tees, and the guy's like, dude, I wasn't able to get tickets, and I just gave him the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got rid of my 11 tickets to the show.
Yeah. But I think we'll move off of the Forbidden Dance sellout talk. And again, they're going to be having some sections still remaining for general admission starting on Friday. So you can still try. Best of luck if you try to go for tickets again. And yeah, let's sell this motherfucker out for realsies with these remaining tickets that'll go on sale for general. But we're going to get into our review of AEW Dynamite from this week, but I got to shill real quick. Make sure you guys download this fine show on Google or Apple Podcasts. If you listen to us on Spotify or any other podcasting platform, give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. You can leave a rating and a review, and if you're so inclined, you can leave a donation through our podcast provider, Red Circle. But the easiest way for you guys to support us is by following us on social media. On Twitter, we are at ATElitePod. At Social Suplex are the guys that make this show possible. Please check out all the other podcasts that they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowicz, SZUMOWICZ, and Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. Now we can get into our AEW Dynamite review that took place from Baltimore, Maryland. Shout out John Harbaugh, first of all, head coach of the Baltimore Ravens at this show. They cut to him like multiple times for one specific segment that we'll talk about later. But of course, I am a Michigan man. I know Jim Harbaugh. I tolerate that man. He won a Big Ten championship and he made the college football playoff this year. He did what I asked of him. But for like the last 6 years or so, he's been dog shit. That's just one more say. I've criticized that man way more than people around me, and people think I'm insane for it. But I've never been a massive Jim Harbaugh fan. But regardless. Regardless, we're not talking about football. We're going to open things up with the Owen Hart Foundation men's tournament qualifying match. I believe this was the last qualifier match before the bracket was fully filled out, and it was Red Dragons Bobby Fish facing off against Jeff Hardy with Adam Cole Bebe on commentary for this match. My God, I love how the pop for Jeff and Matt Hardy is like insane. Like they fucking go banana. For when that music hits.
I got to say the genius that is Tony Khan. Every week, the starting music is either Adam Cole or CM Punk.
I mean, yeah, you know how to get that crowd going.
That's how you get the crowd going. Yes, it's either Adam Cole or CM Punk.
Yeah, I mean, like, if pretty much the easiest one, and like, or you could do Jericho too. That would work as well.
Oh yes.
If you didn't have the JAS intro, because that takes the wind out of the sails a little bit. But that's the fucking point. Yes. But this opening match, this qualifying match for the Owen Hart Foundation tournament, was pretty dang good. Honestly, Jeff got worked his leg really worked on by Bobby Fish, trying to really take Jeff Hardy from getting his high flying offense. It was at some point where I thought Jeff was working a little slow, but then he turned it up another gear, and I was just like, nope, he's back into it all of a sudden. Really solid opening match, honestly. Jeff became the sixth man to qualify for the tournament and got the win, forcing the Undisputed Elite from not having 3 members in the tournament. Now it's only just 2 members with Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. And this was a good opening match, honestly. It wasn't anything outstanding, I feel like, but this was just a good match with a babyface that people absolutely adore, and then one member of the Undisputed Elite, which are crazy over right now. And this was just a really good opener to Dynamite, and like I said, I'm pretty sure that solidified, if I'm not mistaken, or there might have been one more match, if I'm not mistaken, that there was one more men's qualifier match later in the night that fully solidified who all the members were, except for one, for the men's tournament for the Owen Hart Foundation. So, Floyd, go ahead.
I don't know if Jeff Hardy is either old or injured. I don't know which one he was.
You were going to say, like, you thought he was moving slow, too?
He was moving slow. Like, Bobby Fish literally three different times waited for him to get in position.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was going to say, I thought he brought it back a little bit closer towards the end, but, like, yeah, I was like, he seemed a little bit behind.
I think
it's just because, like I said, this man threw himself off a fucking ladders for, like, 15 years.
Yeah. Crazy piece of trivia. Bobby Fish is actually older than Jeff Hardy.
It's nuts.
Jeff Hardy's actually been in the national scope a lot longer than Bobby Fish. But Bobby Fish is actually older than Jeff Hardy. I just thought in this match, Jeff Hardy's age was there. But I will say this because I am the proclivity of a positivity. It very well be he might not be 100%, and he hadn't worked a singles match in a while. He'll come back to it. He's Jeff Hardy. The ism, as it's called in social suplex, I don't even know what that means. I've just heard it said a lot of times in our group. He's over. He's one of the. He is going to, at 70 years old, be walking out, and he's going to put his hands over his head and flicks his hips, and fans are going to go crazy because this dude, say what you want, he's always over.
Mm-hmm.
So, match. It was a match at that point. And, you know, the right guy won, especially for what's it setting up in the future. The right guy won.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, like Jeff is, like I said, probably like this man has already jumped off so much high shit since he's gotten to AEW. And I mean, at this point, man, is like he's getting old to the point where he's done that for so long. They're going to catch up with him eventually. But like, we're just going to keep riding until the wheels fall off with Jeff because, I mean, like, for God's sakes, the people fucking love him. We moved over then to a trios match, a.k.a. the Blackpool Combat Club kick the shit out of people match. I'm being a little bit too harsh. The Andrade Family Office got a little bit of offense in this with the Butcher, the Blade, and Helico facing off against Danielson, Moxley, and Yuta. In the end, though, the BCC continued to showcase why they are probably one of the most dominant trios in AEW. And I am so excited, too, because they were building up the fact that Wheeler Yuta is going to be in the Best of the Super Juniors tournament, which I am very excited about.
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much guaranteed I'm going to be tuning in to the Best of the Super Juniors. Unfortunately, I have done a horrible job of keeping up with New Japan.
Basically,
COVID came, and I watched a match where fans couldn't cheer, and it was just like I couldn't. But if you want to, if you are like me, and you have gotten a little behind on New Japan Wrestling, I do have a solution for you. And it's on the Social Suplex Network. It is the best New Japan pro wrestling podcast in the world. Keeping mm-hmm. strong style with
yes.
the godfather of Social Suplex, Jeremy Donovan, and probably the smartest man in professional wrestling, the young boy, Josh Smith. So, like me, if you need to catch up and get to know, make sure you watch it, listen to that. The show usually comes out on Tuesdays or Wednesdays once a week, and they get you caught up. This week, they discussed the last pay-per-view and a little bit about the Forbidden Door coming up. Not a little bit, but they talked about the Forbidden Door coming up. So, make sure you tune into that show. That's a commercial. I don't do that very often. But with the New Japan AEW working relationship, you will probably hear that a little more than more often now.
And you should listen to it because it's a great podcast.
No, it's absolutely. I listened to the podcast before I knew Jeremy and Josh. Before I knew who they were, I was listening to their podcast to keep up with New Japan. So.
It's the best. It's one of the best podcasts you can listen to for that. But yeah. BCC continued to kick ass. I'm still waiting for those trios titles whenever the fuck they get announced because I'm waiting for them. I want them. I want them bad. But yeah, I love the BCC. They've been great. And yeah, I think we'll move on from that. Yeah. We had a backstage interview with the FTW champion Absolute Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. They had called out the AEW tag team champions Jurassic Express. And Jungle Boy eventually said, came back and was like, you know what? You want these tag titles? We'll give you a chance. But first, you should defend that FTW championship that you almost never defend. And Christian was the one that also pointed that out as well. Ricky agreed to the stipulation and said next week on Dynamite, Starks versus Jungle Boy for the FTW championship, which would then lead to Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs getting a shot at the AEW Tag Team Championships somewhere down the line. Yes, I am very much looking forward to that. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And then
this is the two young up and coming people. Jungle Boy, one of the pillars. Ricky Starks probably should be in that pillar list too, because he has been just as featured since he arrived in his match, and he's been FTW champion forever. So we're getting a Jungle Boy versus Ricky Starks match. These are two very much pushed individuals going up against each other. So it is going to be great, and that's what it's building to. And that's just the tag match is going to be fine. Will Hobbs has been very underrated in AEW, as he understands his role as a big man. So that tag match is going to be great. I like everything that's going on with this segment.
Uh-huh. And we also had another backstage segment with Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, basically saying that they're not done with Starks and Hobbs. And that's pretty much what it led to other than that. But then we can just move over now to the next match. Wardlow facing off against, I can't imagine who it's going to be, MJF's mystery opponent, who was confirmed to be William Morrissey. And yeah, is big guess. Wardlow got great reactions as he got brought out to the arena in handcuffs with the AEW security. And Morrissey, god damn, like we talked about it last week, but this dude is like unrecognizable since he's returned to wrestling, like since he's returned from his demons that he battled. He looks like a million bucks, like god damn. And honestly, if I'm being honest with myself, this was like my second favorite match, I think, on the card, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah, they did a good job of Morrissey looking good. He looked good in his match. He looked fluid in his match. Some people like that it looked like there was a hitch in his giddy up. I did not see that.
I didn't see it.
I just saw a few people that I trust pointing it out. But I thought they made him look dominant, and he played to the crowd, and he helped to shut up the chants that were going on. They had a chant of "We want Enzo" from one side of the building, and then the other side said "No, we don't," which a lot of people feel that way. I've always been an Enzo fan. Don't look at me funny. So, but I did not want him showing up tonight. This was about almost like the re-debut of W. Morrissey. I every time I watch Impact, I like it. I don't keep up with it weekly to week, but every time I watch Impact, I like it. I want to say that before I say this. This was kind of Cass's or Morrissey's re-debut to a national audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know, please, if you watch Impact, do not get offended. They're great. They're great. They have done a lot of good for him, letting him, rebuild himself, get his life in order. But on a national scale, this was like his re-debut, and he came out and he looked like a million bucks. Like, if I am the WWE, I'm calling, like, so when's your contract with Impact up? I'm calling him back, because they saw a lot in him. He just wasn't ready for it yet.
Yeah.
This man looks ready for it.
Yeah, and unbelievable work he did of shutting up the crowd chanting for Enzo, with him doing the stupid chicken walk that he does and then just telling him to shut the fuck up, was great. Dude is so big and strong. Like, the way that they were able to just showcase like how strong each guy was, being able to knock them off each other's feet. Wardlow is still like such a – he's getting over so well with his incredible like hybrid offense that he has, where like, yes, he's a big man that can power slam another big man to fucking oblivion, but also he's a guy that can fucking do a moonsault, because that's a thing that he can do too. Like, I don't know how he can do it, but he can. And yeah, this was a really good match that showcased both of them. And if Morrissey wanted to keep doing stuff with AEW, I'm sure that the door would be open. They've got plenty of room for big men to be in the company. I mean, like, everyone wants to say that AEW is filled with nothing but small guys that, like, are just doing flips and shit. We got some big guys too, and they could use another one if they want one. But otherwise,
big, and then there's big cat.
There's big cast too.
Morrissey, excuse me, William Morrissey. I'm like, there's big, and then there's him.
Yeah,
like,
there's Morrissey.
When he's 77, when he says he's 7 foot tall, he's 6'10". He's ever bit. He puts on some Timbs. He's 7 foot. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, he's right there.
No, yeah, and Morrissey did great in this match, honestly. And I'm just glad to see that he's just thriving in his new feet, in his new, like, almost body, since he's really just kind of improved himself. And I cannot be more than happy for the guy, because it's just, it's good to see him doing this and having a different outlook and just a different in a better place in his life, honestly. And I hope nothing for the best for him if he continues that impact, or if he does more stuff with AEW. Whatever he does, like, I'm glad to see that he's doing a lot better.
Dude, he could definitely, like, be like a heel's muscle. Like, if he was available to sign with AEW, if he was the new Wardlow for MJF, I think that would be, like, super awesome.
Sure, yeah. And after the match was over, though, Wardlow had security try to put him in handcuffs. That did not work. Wardlow actually lashed out this time and knocked every single security guard that came down his path and knocked him down, screaming, release me from my contract. This will keep happening until you release me. MJF was like, all right, how would you feel about us having a little bit of a match, and if you win, I'll let you out of your contract? And he's like, but I got conditions, because of course this dude does, and those conditions will be done in a contract signing that will happen in the most magical place in the world, known as Long Island, New York, next week on Dynamite.
Hey, okay. I feel like I like MJF and his thing, but this whole thing with the stipulations to get a match with him, it's becoming kind of like a sitcom. You know? Sitcoms, like, you got your beginning, you got your middle, you got your, and you kind of knew when you're watching a sitcom, when it was coming on. That's what MJF storylines are coming out. I'm like, maybe they add a wrinkle over the next few weeks before we get to I'm going to always leave it open, because AEW doesn't disappoint. But it's becoming like, it started with Cody, and now, you know, Jericho, and it's just like, and even CM Punk, and it's just like,
oh no, yeah, no, it's like, you gotta get through so many guys before you even get to touch MJF. Then he'll have to make some stipulations into terms of how you get your hands on him, and then he'll probably get the better of you the first time, and then you'll eventually get your way to him for a second time, and then you'll actually get over on him.
Oh yeah, so I just like, as much as I love MJF, how many people are we going to cycle through the same thing on?
Yeah, and like this, like that's the biggest thing. We don't want this to be like the only play that he has in his playbook, because MJF has shown himself to be unbelievably good at like adapting to a situation. Because I mean, like, he's a character that you could put in anything, and he could get heat, and he could get a good focus on the story. But if this is his only play, like, I mean, which I don't think it is, but it's just like, it is starting to look like, all right, so we're kind of going down the same path a little bit. Is anything going to change up, or like, what's going on? Like, I don't understand like what the situation is going to be. But
yeah, no, it's just like, it's just, I'm watching it and I'm just like saying it, and it's just like, if you're a person that has watched it from the beginning, brand new people don't know the gimmick, and it's fine. But if you're a person day one Dynamite guy, I mean, shit, if you're day 100 Dynamite or 50 Dynamite guy, and you're on your third person with this, you're like, okay, what makes it where he gets all this power in every storyline? He has the higher ground. It's like, CM Punk's clearly a bigger star. How can MJF dictate to him what he has to do to get to wrestle him?
With Wardlow, it makes sense, though.
It absolutely makes sense. I'm not taking away from it. I'm just saying, you're looking at the situation, and there's this guy named Tony Khan. It's just like, you feel like Tony Khan just jumps in and says, hey, you got to fight Wardlow. No, because Wardlow's not under contract with AEW. He's under contract with MJF. Get it? I understand. They explained it. I'm just saying, when they get to the next person, change it up. Maybe on this one, change it up, you know? Maybe Wardlow loses. I don't know what you do. Because I feel like it has to end with Wardlow winning, but it's just like you have to figure out a way to change it up.
They've at least changed up the presentation with him being carried out in handcuffs as compared to like just Punk just wrestling random people, like not random people, but just his goons with the Pinnacle. So
I love it that he's so scared of Wardlow. He's so scared of Wardlow. He doesn't want him free at any time.
Yeah. No, and again, I think it'll be exciting to see like what stipulation wise they go for this match, because you know they're going to do something like that. But we will then move over to in-ring interview with the AEW World Champion Hangman Adam Page and his response since being announced that he will be defending his championship against the best in the world, CM Punk, at Double or Nothing. And Hangman came out and said how it would be really easy for him to come out and say how he loves and respects CM Punk and he's looking forward to shaking his hand in the ring and standing across from him at Double or Nothing. And he said it would be really easy how he's looking forward to having an all-time classic for the AEW championship. And he said that would be really easy, but it's not going to happen. He said at Double or Nothing, there will be no handshakes. He's going to destroy CM Punk. And he also talked about how the match isn't going to be some like circle jerk or masturbatory tribute to Bret Hart. Like,
okay.
Yeah. Boss. Now you've pissed off Floyd.
You picked my side. I had no dog in this fight.
Yeah.
I was planning on going to Double Nothing, sitting in my seat, having on my Darby Allin shirt.
Probably DMing me if Punk loses, like probably busting my balls.
Ready to give you shit. And then Hangman goes and picks my side. I will be in a CM Punk shirt. At Double or Nothing. And I am Punk all the way.
That's what I'm talking about.
This dude insulted me. Now, everybody's like, well, he didn't say anything about FTR. A masturbatory Bret Hart tribute match? What do you call the match that happened last week?
Yeah, or the match that happened with Dax and Punk.
Dude, I felt like I've always been there for the horse. I've always been there for the horse. And the horse kicked me in the chest. Yeah. You know what happens when a horse kicks you in the chest on a farm? You put that motherfucker down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm calling on 2013 Floyd. Hey, 2013 Floyd, this is Floyd. Think we got to go back in the saddle. Oh, yeah. Oh, really? It's time to let you out. Yes. 2013 Floyd is let out of his cage.
Yes.
We are going to put that horse to freaking sleep.
You know what? It might have taken a little bit longer than I would have personally liked. You know, I would have liked it if you had remained loyal to my boy since you were in 2013 and all that types of stuff. You know, I would have liked that. But you know what? I'm not going to get picky. You've seen the light, at least. I believe that Hangman Adam Page, who I've got nothing but love and respect for, like I said, one of the top AEW champions out of the four that have been world champion in AEW and probably could be argued to be one of the best because his run to becoming champion was one of their best stories that they had put on in the company's history. However, I believe that gold is going to that man's head. I believe that man has all of a sudden gotten a little bit too big for his cowboy britches and has all of a sudden lost his way because saying, oh, he's off filming another TV show. Isn't that ironic? And he said, I'm going to embarrass you at Double or Nothing. And I'm like, I'm sorry, Mr. Cowboy. Weren't you put in this position by your friends who were also EVPs of this company? If you want to talk about people taking advantage of their situation, if you want to talk about people who are like gifted things or are doing things in like, oh, they're off doing other things and then all of a sudden they can get this type of stuff. Like, what the fuck does that make you? What the fuck does that make you?
Not good Listen. Enough to get a TV show. That's what it makes them.
There you go. So, like I said, this is all of a sudden like y'all, you wanted to make this. I was going to be like cheering for my boy at the same time, but I wasn't going to be like going bad on Hangman. Like, why would I do that? But now you fired the shots And now you've made it an issue. Now you've made yourself Eddie Kingston is what you've done. And I love Eddie Kingston, but I also hate Eddie Kingston for a very good reason. And it's because CM Punk hates Eddie Kingston. So, Mr. Hangman Adam Page, like I said last week, I was in attendance.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's for when CM Punk made his return to wrestling after 7 years of being away. I was in attendance. The first match I saw CM Punk wrestle live was his first match in 7+ years. And now, at Las Vegas, Nevada, at the T-Mobile Arena, I will be in attendance when CM Punk has that AEW championship around his waist and wins his first championship since his record-breaking 434-day reign as WWE champion. You cannot deny it at this point, and Hangman is honestly becoming the denier at this point because he is very much led this. He's lost the Cowboy Wade. The code is gone. He doesn't have Dark Order to reel him back in and be like, buddy, realize what you're saying right now. So, Hangman, I love you, boy, but you're getting turned into glue right now. We're taking the horse to the glue factory, and cowboy shit is going to be replaced with thousands and thousands and thousands of chants for CM Punk. And I'm so glad Floyd is on my side for that, but you know what? Hangman had to make that comment, which I'm sorry, man. I know you don't like it when people like that just like you got caught. You got like he was spraying bullets and you got friendly fired.
Dude, I just saw the guy. We talked. Shit, I was really close to giving him my Hangman Chase figure because he said he didn't have it. I was feeling that dude. He's so nice.
He is.
And then he had to go and try to hurt me for no reason. I didn't do anything to him.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, FTR did drop him up on the head and take his tag team belts. Hey,
that's
water under the bridge. And I can say
it's business.
My history with Punk. I was there in that magical city of Oklahoma City where after Batista, I had a conversation with Edge. CM Punk bravely walked down to the ring, looked Edge in the face, gave him a go to sleep, and became the World Heavyweight Champion of WWE. His first major title in WWE. I was there in Oklahoma City when that happened. Like Austin, I was there when he came back from his 7-year break. I was there for his first match in AEW, and I will be there at the end of May when Mr. CM Punk climbs to the top of the ladder AEW and gets his birthplace, Tony Khan's chosen star, and becomes the AEW champion. And me and Austin will go out after and have a celebratory Pepsi for Mr. CM Punk to celebrate him being a champion.
Pepsis and ice cream bars.
And to celebrate Hangman's ticket back to the mid card. Boom.
Yes. And I cannot wait for the people who are going to come at me and be like, you do know that it's probably in Punk's best interest to put Hangman over. You know, he doesn't need the championship. You know, Punk wanted to put a spotlight on the younger guys, and if he ruins Hangman's title reign, it would be a terrible decision. I don't understand. Like,
you play to win the game, okay? That Herm Edwards said it, you play to win the game. Yeah, he's been nice, and he's been giving everybody the rub. But it's time for Punk to take what's his. Yes, my switch done flipped. Yes, this is different, Floyd. But this switch was flipped by Hangman. This person always lived inside of here. He was always here. But, I had him in a little box.
I was trying to bring him out.
Hangman said, hey, let's open the box. Floyd, CM Punk fan, is back. Screw that horse.
Let's go. I know so many people are going to be pissed off because they loved it when you were like reeling me in with my CM Punk fandom. But now you're on my side. Now you're on my side. See, now you can't escape the CM Punk fandom. Whether you want to or not, it will remain on this show. And it will be, it has now been amplified because of that horse. Because of that goddamn horse. But moving on. We had a match that was announced for Rampage by Jay Lethal, Satnam Singh, and Sanjay Dutt for Konosuke Takeshita, and we'll talk about that when we preview Rampage. And then we had the grudge match between the newly nicknamed The Wizard, Chris Jericho, after Rampage, facing off against Santana. I'm sorry, when you call yourself The Wizard, I just think of the Nintendo movie.
See, like, I think of The Wizard of Oz, and since Chris Jericho is probably that old for that to mean something to him, that makes me laugh.
There you go. Well, I just think of The Wizard just because of that. I just imagine Chris Jericho sitting on Universal Studios' backlot tour as he gets yelled, "Just sit down and have fun, damn it!" That's just what I imagine. It's just weird. Regardless, though. Santana made the dive, Tope Suicida, as Jericho was making his entrance. They were beating him up with steel steps, and I found it quite funny that the JAS proceeded to not do anything about this. Like, you know, kind of just like they didn't want to cross Ortiz. I get Ortiz is a very dangerous and crazy man, but like,
I believe y'all, Ortiz had a bat.
I realize that, but like,
I mean, I
didn't see him swinging it.
I think it at least made it make sense a little bit. And, you know,
I was just saying
a little bit.
I was pointing it out.
Oh, you know, this is another episode of Faces Have No Friends.
It very much is. But regardless of the fact, this match, when it eventually got into the ring, was a pretty solid match. Santana wrestling single style, had some really good moments. Of course, we love it when he throws up the Three Amigos. I also love too the really quick frog splash that he hit after headbutting Jericho off of the top rope when they were fighting up top. I like that just because it was like, okay, he's got the opening. He's not going to stagger and give Jericho a chance to get back up and knock him down again. He actually just like, once he hit the floor, once he hit the canvas, he was like, all right, frog splash, go, and then just did it. And I thought that was a solid little bit of stuff right there. There was outside interference multiple times where Angelo tried to use the baseball bat, and Ortiz took that away. Santana, there was just constant interference. Even at one point, Daddy Matt was on the apron and distracted the referee again. And then Jericho low-blowed Santana, hit the Judas Effect, got the win. And then the JS proceeded to jump on Santana and Ortiz the entire time because Eddie Kingston's still recovering from getting flamed in the face last week. But yeah, this is in the situation of faces don't have friends. But I know that a lot of people will also complain that, like, all matches will a lot of times end with the heels beating down the baby faces, and then baby face friends will come out and save them. At least this time you didn't get nobody saving you, so at least you got that. But
I want to say this about this section. I understand the story. The story is, Eddie Kingston's going to come back with two more friends. It's building to the two friends. It's making you anticipate the two friends. It is making you hate the Jericho Appreciation Society. It's establishing the Jericho Appreciation Society as a force. I understand the storytelling aspects of it, but good Lord, you're like, oh, we're going out there and there's only two of us and five of them. You think you could find three people in the back that just like hate Jericho and the group as much as you do or something. But again, that's always going to be a stupid hill I have. This is a thing that generally bothers me and no one else, so I get it. So I can honestly move on to the point where I am looking forward to who the two people are going to be, because AEW is excellent at surprises. And whether it is Homicide and Hernandez from the old LAX crew, maybe it's another debuting tag team, maybe it's somebody that got it coming along the pipe that you would never think of. But something's about to happen, and I think we're going to get blood and guts. I think that's where this is leading.
That would be nuts. But yeah, I thought this was all right. I thought this was a decent enough match. And then we had the Gun Club and Acclaimed getting scissors in backstage. don't really know what else to say about that.
Mr. Ass scissored him. They scissored him. That means you're best friends forever. That's a new faction. That was a faction being born right there.
Okay.
I don't know what the faction is going to be called, but is it, or are they just going to be under the window of the Acclaim, or is it going to be the whole Ass family? But all I know is they can put out a really good rap album with two of the people.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now I just imagine like scissors with asses t-shirts, and I just like,
yeah.
Do you actively want to print those? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking forward to in Vegas going to Max's concert, because he has to feature Austin Gunn now, right? Doesn't he?
At this point, I mean, like, might as well.
They're best friends now. Best friends.
Yeah. Moving over now, we had the Varsity Blondes, who on AEW Dark earlier in the week made the call out to the House of Black that they were going to talk, that they were going to call them out on Dynamite. And they were out there with Julia Hart, Griff Garrison, Brian Pillman Jr. And Brian Pillman was talking about he standed before the crowd, a young, humbled man, not just because of his experience in AEW, but because of the encounter with the House of Black. It was probably the most humbling experience, though, was watching everything he had worked for being torn apart little by little. However, he remembered a quote from John Harbaugh, who they cut to like five different times before he was even mentioned by Brian. Like, bro, wait for him to say his name, then you can cut to him. Like, otherwise, you just cut to John Harbaugh and it's like, why does he care about this? Oh, because of that reason. And then it's just like you could have waited a little bit. I know that we showed him earlier in the show and like you wanted to show him one more time before the promo started, but it's like, wait a second, because like we know he's there. We know he's there. He said how that quote from John Harbaugh was to attack each day and with enthusiasm. And he said he lost sight of that. He got comfortable, complacent. They lost their enthusiasm. The Black House of Black drove them apart. It's a new day. He's feeling enthusiastic about protecting the one thing that's made them whole, and that's keeping everybody together, protecting Julia. So he wants to fight the House of Black. Lights come off. Lights go off. They come out and they appear, and they start surrounding Brian and Griff. And Julia's in the corner being like shielded a little bit by Brian and Griff. And they jump and attack on them, and eventually, after they finish attacking, Malakai slowly approaches Julia and then has a steel chair in hand. Gives it to Julia, who's like quivering at the sight of Malakai. Eventually, though, starts to get a bit of a smile when she's brought over by Brody King with the steel chair, and Buddy Matthews is trying to get him to swing the chair at Griff Garrison, who's like staggered, like, don't do this, please. And she's looking like she might do it, and she doesn't do it. And Malakai Black is furious, grabs the steel chair away, rips off the eye patch of Julia Hart. And that's when the Death Triangle comes out and chases off the House of Black while Julia is still clutching at her eye. So we didn't get the turn just yet. And I know people are like dying from blue balls over this, but we didn't get it yet. They're still teasing it. But I will say this, because of course we know that the House of Black is one of those factions that are just like, the fans think they're unbelievably cool. So like, even though they're being portrayed as heels, they don't really care because they're just crazy cool. This was a situation where the Varsity Blondes, with their like old school 80s style like babyface look, in a feud like this, like, the fans are going to turn on them so hard because they think the House of Black is so cool and they're waiting for Julia to turn, and Garrison and Pillman are going to get eaten alive by the fans in this feud. I want to be clear.
I want to say something that I don't know if I said it, but I've always felt in AEW. I love every show, but I always feel like the show is literally overbooked by one segment every week, right? This was the segment.
And I know they were using it because they wanted to keep adding a little bit more to this story that had been holding on to for a while. But it's like, first off, I didn't love Brian's promo. Unfortunately, I thought it was kind of slow. And this
reeked of Brian Pillman was only there because John Harbaugh was in the first row. Like, this segment was only on the show because John Harbaugh was in the
first row. There was that, and also because they wanted to keep that Julia Hart, like, when the fuck is she going to turn? Like, that's they just wanted to keep that, like, people guessing on that sort of thing. And
I know they give their wrestlers latitude, but I could not tell where he was going. And the actions once the House of Black got to the ring didn't line up with everything he said. He sounded like he was calling them out to fight. He stood there and waited on them.
Yeah, he didn't make the first move.
He should have been the aggressor. You just called these people out. And then the whole Julia Hart thing, I actually like the slow burn of that. I do. I actually do. But this felt like this could have been like a segment
Rampage.
On Rampage that you literally had and let it play and then cut it to, you know, and it just seems like, of course, Brian Pillman Jr. is getting better. I'm not burying the guy. It just felt like this segment seemed out of place on this show.
A little bit, yeah. Well, like I said, too, like when the fight took place, like the crowd had like kind of no reaction to it. And it's just simply because like they know that Varsity Blondes are being portrayed as the baby faces, but they don't care because they love Malachi. They love Brody. They love Buddy. Like they love the House of Black. So this is the one situation, because even for people that are like cool, that people like to boo, like to cheer and stuff like that, like Adam Cole and Red Dragon, at the end of the day, they will eventually get booed because they're good at their job. That's how it works. With a situation like this, it's like while Malachi and Buddy and all the House of Black are good at their jobs, the Varsity Blondes aren't like there as baby faces to like bring the crowd back to like, oh yeah, these are the baby faces. Let's cheer them. Because like AEW fans do still cheer and boo who you're supposed to be cheering and booing most of the time. Like 99% of the time. But a situation like this, it's like the Varsity Blondes just aren't there as a team to like make you want to cheer for them because of the House of Black and how they're presented and how they showcase themselves. It's just how it goes. And then when Julia Hart turns, they're going to get eaten alive. Like, it's just what it is. So, but regardless of that, we will move on now to the final qualifier match for the men's Owen Hart tournament. And it's Dante Martin versus Rey Fénix, which we now... Should we bring up now that we know more about why Darius Martin is out yet again?
Yes, he was in a car wreck.
Yeah.
Of all things.
Dude can't catch a break.
Of all things, he was in a car wreck, and he is going to be out 6 to 9 months. After just being out all better part of a year, I am, my heart breaks for the kid. I'm like, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, Top Flight is that team that I was looking forward to over the next few years. I feel like he's gonna come back. Don't get me wrong. I feel like he's gonna come back 100%. But man, you know, that's a tough break. Tough break for him.
Yeah, but again, like hope, like I feel for the kid. Like it's a really like rough situation to be in. It's just like it's just rotten luck and like. Hopefully he's able to get healthy and quickly, as quickly as humanly possible, because I know the fans would love to see him back. But yeah, it's a shame because, again, like I said, it was so good to finally see him back after that long absence. But regardless, Dante Martin and Rey Fénix faced off in the final match for the qualifying for this tournament. And holy shit, the flippy shit. Like, it's exactly what you knew you were going to get. You were going to get the flippiest of the flippy shit and, like, I saw people literally tweeting, like, this is live-action Dragon Ball, which it was absolutely. When they did the fucking flip, when they did the goddamn Spanish fly and they landed on their feet and then just looked at each other with, like just Dante's fuming and Fénix has got, like, this cold stare on his face. And then that's when Dante got hit, used the Poison Rana on Rey Fénix. Like, fucking hell. Like, dude, it's unreal. And, like, there was, like, the one thing that they talked about that they hadn't seen, the back-flipping Russian leg sweep, which, like, off of the second rope. Can't say that I've heard that move before in my life. Rey Fénix got the win. Kind of made sense because he just came back from injury and they want to, like, put a spotlight on him again by getting the great driver that he put on Dante. Fucking great match. Like, just really, really good match. These guys just... Like, there is, like, even the one point where, like, it took a little bit of time for Fénix to get, I think, Dante up on, like, a powerbomb position didn't matter because, like, dude, these guys just killed it. Like, such great work.
Man, watching him made me think AEW should do, like, a Star of the Future tournament. And it should be, like, on Dark and Dark Elevation. Like, 25 and under, never held a title kind of thing, and just... Let Martin and Lee Johnson and Lee Moriarty and all of them just go at it. Maybe give one of them a title shot on the Dynamite at the end, you know, at the end of it. Of course, they could lose, win, whatever you want to do. But it's just you have so much young athletic talent that it would be nice if they got to, you know, wrestle against each other kind of featured. Martin is one of them. This match just was like all you could see was dollar signs. You could see like, oh my God, if there wasn't an AEW, this guy would be like the star on the indies. That's how athletic and that's how agile and everything he is. This had the feels of the first time I ever saw Will Ospreay and Ricochet. I never heard of either one of them before that match. And I saw them and they were flipping and doing the superhero pose. It had this had that same kind of feel where you were just seeing some kind of crazy athleticism. Just tats off to both of them. I've always said Rey Fénix, when he can stay healthy, top five wrestler in the world, because he just has a way of putting things together that I have never seen before. I saw the flip unprettier or whatever you want to call it, that move. Oh my God, so much stuff in this match that I honestly wouldn't need Excalibur to describe, because I wouldn't even know what the movements are called. That, oh man, just chef's kiss, hat tip. These dudes are phenomenal.
Absolutely. But we then had Thunder Rosa come out as the AEW Women's World Champion, and she called out the number one contender for her championship, Serena Deeb. Some things change, some things stay the same. What was the first feud that we got to bring both of these two girls to AEW? Thunder Rosa versus Serena Deeb. And now AEW's women's champion is Thunder, and Serena Deeb has worked her way after winning the street fight against Hikaru Shida, and she is now getting a title shot to Thunder Rosa, which means, you know what this means, the Straight Edge Society will be holding AEW gold in 2022. It is destined to happen. You cannot deny it. I love Thunder Rosa. I really do.
All right, yeah, but I was gonna say, you know I'm not going
I love Thunder Rosa. Yeah. This is a situation where Floyd's not going to be on my side with this, because I know Thunder Rosa is her girl. And Thunder Rosa is genuinely one of my favorite women wrestlers as well. But like, just for the fandom in me, myself, as a CM Punk fan, just to be able to say, like, the thought of the two of the biggest members of the Straight Edge Society, Punk himself and Serena Deeb. I don't have Doc Gallows. Maybe he'll be at the show. I don't know. But, like, and Joey Mercury is still in WWE, I'm pretty sure, as a producer. But regardless, like, just to say if they both won championships, the two like most recognizable members of the Straight Edge Society winning AEW gold in 2022, like, it just make me feel so happy inside. This is one that I'm like, I know I'm screaming into the void for, because Thunder Rosa is outstanding. I love her championship brain. It's not going to happen. But like, I would like it to happen just because it would be cool. Like, it would just seem really cool. But like, regardless, this little promo between these two was solid. It was decent. Serena Deeb talking about how she's on another level, on a class of her own, and she's going to have that championship. And they are going to prove, this is supposed to be like really putting the AEW women's division on the map, and like being like, we're going to make this the best women's division in the world. But in order for that to happen, the best women's wrestler in the world has to be champion. And Deeb believes it's her. Rosa believes it's her. And like, there you go. That's your Double or Nothing championship match. Okay.
My big thing is, in wrestling, you put your wrestlers in a position to succeed, right?
Yes.
I don't think this segment was the best position for them to succeed.
The promo, yeah, no.
Now,
It wasn't bad.
I'm not just going to critique. I'm going to give us a solution.
Go ahead.
Imagine if this was backstage, sit down with Jim Ross in the middle.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly.
Like, control the flow of the conversation. Because the words sounded like you were building a big match. But the energy of a big match wasn't there.
I think that was the thing, is that they wanted to be able to have, like, because, again, it was another situation where it's like they wanted to have them, like, in in the arena for it, and they didn't want it to just be a video package. But even like, even still though, even if it's still though like that though, because like people fucking went nuts for the BCC segment that they had on Twitter. Yes. So much so that they said, put that on Dynamite. And they did.
Yep. Tony Schiavone in the middle of there, helping direct the flow of the conversation. It was just a couple of like long-winded segments where you could just tell the audience checked out. And yes. I just think it could have used a voice there. Whoever it is, it could have used a third voice there to help direct the conversation. Because they were going for intensity, and they didn't hit it.
It wasn't a perfect hit. No.
Yeah, no, no. Borderline miss.
You could call it a miss, yeah.
Yes, because it was like, you just follow that amazing match. The crowd's pumped up, and it's just like, then you just got like 10 minutes of talking, and it was just like, I mean, Baltimore checked out. They checked out, and unfortunately, they never came back in this episode.
Yes, and then we get into the main event then, the Ring of Honor Women's Championship unification match between Deonna Purrazzo and the interim champion, Mercedes Martinez. And this was a Ring of Honor main event, and I think it was fine.
Was a decision. And yeah. You just go with that decision. And don't get me wrong, but like hindsight is 2020. Everybody's an armchair booker. I honestly say Martin and Phoenix probably should have went on last. Personally.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing happened. Like if Mercedes Martinez next challenger came out and that led to a big moment at the end of the show, absolutely. But I watched it when it happened, and then I read it back because I always like to. And this was a perfectly executed, well worked match. Lots of intensity, told the story, built to the finish. All great, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just no one cared.
Yeah, and again, I know why they did. It was the championship unification. Like for Ring of Honor, this was a big match, but it's just like. Yeah, I will say this. I don't want Ring of Honor to be a situation where like they're doing their own thing and then AEW tries to put like pick something that's big for Ring of Honor and then put it on AEW, make it feel big, and then like the AEW hardcore fans don't really care. I don't want it to be a situation like that. I don't want it to be like that. And I'm kind of worried. Like again, I would be perfectly fine if Ring of Honor just does what they want to do, and then like if they want to have like a big Ring of Honor like huge match on like an AEW pay-per-view, go for it. But like I don't want them to be like just like, okay, this is a big deal for Ring of Honor, let's put it on AEW, even though these people maybe may or not care for the Ring of Honor storylines. Just because you own Ring of Honor now too and you own AEW doesn't mean you have to have them like intertwined that much. They can do some stuff occasionally, but like I'm wondering, like, because we had the issue with the Satnam Singh debut with the Ring of Honor TV title, and then we had like this match not getting the reaction that they were intending for. I don't want Ring of Honor to like feel secondary for like AEW. I want them to do their thing and be good at it. Like that's just what I want.
Yeah, and like I said, it's like I'm all about women's wrestling. I'm all about featuring it, all about putting it up front. But when you have something like this that kind of goes off without a wet fart, I think it does more damage than good.
I don't think this was as damaging.
It's just to those cheerleaders, the assholes that are like, oh, you know, you can't do anything with women's wrestling. You know, it's like, okay, we're looking at this, and it's just...
It's not a lack of trying. I think the show just wasn't laid out to the point where people could, like, remain hyped for it. I think there was a bit of issue of the layout for Dynamite that may have messed it up. I think this could have been the main event, and I'm fine with it being the main event. I just think some things before it kind of took the wind out of the sails for the excitement for the possible main event. But yeah, it's a situation where like this was an okay average Dynamite, I think, with some pretty damn great moments. But I would say again, this is an average Dynamite, I think, is fair to say.
It was a solid to show. I thought the first hour kind of kicked ass, and the second hour wasn't that great.
Yeah, but regardless, that was AEW Dynamite for this week. We're going to preview this upcoming episode of Rampage that is taking place tonight when you guys are hearing this. We are having Hook in action facing off against JD Drake. We get the match, like we said, Konosuke Takeshita facing off against Jay Lethal. Yuka Sakazaki will be facing Riho in a qualifying match for the women's tournament for Bret Hart.
I think that's the Owen Hart, and I think that's the last one.
I think that is the last one. And then Tony Storm and Ruby Soho will be teaming up to face off against Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, and Jamie Hayter, who had a little back and forth on this episode of Dynamite as well.
So, Lethal and Takeshita is I'm very excited for, because I've seen Takeshita on Dark, and I think there's something there, but I feel like he needs somebody to really bring out that side of him. So, one of the better wrestlers in AEW, a consummate professional for like ever, Jay Lethal is the guy to do that.
I agree absolutely with that. I think he'll be a great person to put a spotlight on him as well, and then eventually still get the win. But still, it'll be a really cool match, I think.
I'm interested in where they go with Sakazaki versus Rio, because they flew Sakazaki in earlier this week. They literally pulled her from Tokyo Joshi Pro show to come to AEW to wrestle. Do you think they would fly her all the way here just to have her lose?
I would see. That's the thing. It's like I would like her to be like the underdog, because I love Riho. I really do. And she's one of their best that they have. But like, yeah, for you to do something like that, you kind of wonder, like, is Yuka going to get an upset here?
Because it just seems like it'd be weird to fly her in for one singles match.
Unless maybe, it's a good payday.
Yeah, maybe a Dark Elevation or whatever. It's just like, it feels like you could have put kind of anybody in that spot to take that L. You know what I mean?
But like, I love Yuka, so I don't care.
Yeah, no, I do. I do. I loved Yuka. When she first got announced, I was like, Yuka's going to, after one person left the AEW, I was like, Yuka's going to be my girl. And then, you know, COVID happened and we didn't see her for like ever. So I am rooting for Yuka in this match. You know, I'm rooting for Yuka real hard. It's just, like I said, it's the thoughts running through the head that I don't, stop. It's like, would they fly her all the way over? And this is like, 10 years ago, I wouldn't even known that they just flew her all the way over there. But this played out on Twitter. This wasn't like this secret. Hey, it's like, oh, she's not going to be in Tokyo Joshi Pro because AEW called her in. Huh. Okay. Yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah. And then the matches that were announced for next week's episode of AEW Dynamite. CM Punk and John Silver. Okay. Yes. Didn't ask for that, but I will be happily accepting it. The Meat Man versus CM Punk.
Well, you know, CM Punk has to beat up all of Hangman's friends before Double or Nothing.
Makes sense, I mean, at this point. But at this point, dude, Hangman hasn't even acknowledged the Dark Order. So, like, they might be friends with Hangman, but I don't think Hangman's friends with them at this point.
Yes. I mean, you're right, but it's just like, he's getting, they're getting up to, they're getting up to that match, and it's like Hangman's next. And in Long Island, CM Punk's favorite place in the whole wide world, Long Island.
Who can't even boo that man properly. People were booing Eddie Kingston people were booing CM Punk when he was wrestling Eddie Kingston louder than Long Island was booing CM Punk.
I gotta say, I am excited for MJF's pop next week.
I am as well.
Yeah, it is crazy how much they love that terrible, terrible, amazing human. He's so amazing at being a terrible human, but
yeah,
in Long Island, he's a face. Does Wardlow get cheered in Long Island? I want to know. Does War Pig get cheered in in Long Island? Because I think that's the true test on how over Wardlow is. If he gets cheered in Long Island,
you know something's happening.
Yeah, you gotta have a title on him in the next 3 months, because that's over. Because I saw CM Punk get booed in Long Island, which I honestly didn't think could have.
Yeah, they barely got any muster on that. Like I said, people who were booing Punk louder when he was wrestling Eddie Kingston. It is that. Come at me with a different take. I am right in that regard. Then on Dynamite, of course, next week we're getting the Owen Hart men's tournament is starting up. We're going to have Darby Allin versus Jeff Hardy, Adam Cole versus Dax Harwood. We also got confirmation that the final spot in the tournament for the first round, who will be facing off against Samoa Joe, is a wild card, is a Joker.
Wow.
So we don't know who that's going to be.
So I've heard the prevalent two names. I do not have any inside stories, so nothing that I'm about to say is a spoiler. The two names I've heard the most are Cesaro.
That was fucking what I was going to say.
And the second one is Davey Boy Smith Jr., which I think is the most appropriate one because you would actually have a Hart in the Owen Hart tournament.
I think that would be solid. But
yeah,
like,
so when someone said it, I'm like, so you would have a Hart in the Owen Hart tournament? Genius. I'm like, that's genius.
Well, then it's kind of, but then you get put in a situation where it's like, okay, how far does this go? Like, how far does he go? Does he win the whole thing or is it won by somebody in AEW?
Yeah. I don't know. I you know, when we look at the bracket, I'm going to bring my bracket up and.
Because that's the thing. Is Davey Boy Smith going to be the one who beats Samoa Joe? Or is, like, because, again, like.
No, I'm looking at, let's see. I had the bracket right in front of me a second. So, on the left side, we got Rey Fénix versus Kyle O'Reilly. I think that can go either way. But I'll probably go O'Reilly just because I think they're trying for something different. Then Samoa Joe versus the Joker. And to me, it depends on who the Joker is. I think if it's O'Reilly, then it'll be Samoa Joe versus O'Reilly. If it's Rey Fénix, I think it'll be Rey Fénix versus the Joker. I mean, I know that's kind of a safe pick, but I don't know who the Joker is. Like, I feel like it's going to end up being somebody nobody expects. Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin, I think it's simple. It's Darby, Adam Cole, and Dax Harwood. Dax really wants this really, really bad. So, actually, me and Austin are on opposite sides of the world this week because Austin is the world's foremost mentioned Adam Cole fan. So, Adam Cole makes the most sense, but I will be pulling the most for Dax Harwood. But, yeah, I mean, me, Art Darby wins it. That's how I see it, not just because he's my favorite. It's just he hasn't been in a title picture or anything in a while. That win elevates him. He can get back in the TNT title picture. He can get back in the world. He can get in the world title picture, whatever you decide to do with him. So I think that's who I go with, but that's not knowing who the Joker is.
Yeah, and I will wait until the Joker gets announced before I make my decision.
No, but, you know, Adam Cole winning, too. It's like Adam Cole has, you know, done his work. He
That's probably in, who I would say, honestly, would win the
He came
whole
in
thing.
And he put Hangman over, and he made Hangman look really, really good. And he's had amazing matches, and he's performed on this level. And it's just like, oh, my God. But can a Shawn Michaels guy win the Owen Hart Foundation tournament? I don't know. Can you do that?
Who knows? We'll see.
Shawn Michaels guy. Yeah, and it's so funny because Adam Cole versus Dak Harwood, it's a Shawn Michaels guy versus a Bret Hart guy.
It is quite funny in that regard, but I do think my prediction is Adam Cole winning the whole damn thing. And then please give me Cesaro as the Joker. I know, like, Davey Boy Smith, like, I understand. But, like, I want Cesaro. I want Claudio Castagnoli in AEW. I want that more than anything. Please give me that. Like, or you know what? It doesn't have to be. If you're going to debut Claudio, debut him at Double or Nothing cuz I want to be there for that.
Yes, I'm you know, Cesaro's one of those people underrated for 20 years. He's been underrated for as long as people have been rated. I just thought of another guy I would like to see. I don't know what kind of wrestling shape or whatever is Chris Hero. That would be another good one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you know, us super wrestling fans, we all love us some Chris Hero. That's another one in there that I'm throwing out there. Joker could be a lot of people, you know, so we're going to see. I advise you against amping yourself up too much because nobody promised you anything.
Yeah, don't do a Christian again.
Yeah, no, nobody has promised you anything. Shit, it might be just Christian, you know?
Like, so that'd be a nice fuck you. It's like, oh, it's Christian again.
Yes, it's Christian. It's like, I never said it was going to be somebody debuting. It's Christian, you know? Yeah.
And then, of course, I'll wrap up to Dynamite. The last match that they announced, too, is Ricky Starks versus Jungle Boy for the FTW Championship.
Yeah, that's just going to be an amazing match. I honestly don't care who wins, even though the FTW belt is given respect. I honestly don't care who wins that match. I think it's just, like, the winner is the fans in that one, because I think it's just going to be a really good wrestling match, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. But that is our previews for upcoming episodes of AEW television. We're going to go through some headlines. And I know this isn't on the list, but Floyd, do you want to go down and like mention the fact that we got another look at the AEW console game, which has now got an official name, AEW Fight Forever.
Fight Forever.
Which has also been confirmed for PC as well, console and PC.
Yeah, so it's going to open up the world for some mods on the computer. That's going to be cool. But, you know, we got Chris Statlander and Nyla Rose, and they looked amazing this week.
Yeah, there was a couple things that I had a little bit of like, okay, it's not finished yet, where I was like, the Nyla no-sells for Chris Statlander's offense for like her chops and stuff like that was a little bit more like, I was like, wow, she barely flinched at that. I was like, okay. Obviously, when Nyla made attacks, like physical attacks on Statlander, it was sold a lot more. It looks pretty dang good to me right now, at least. I know some people are picking it apart, and that's fine. Again, it's a game that's not out yet, so like you are more than welcome to do that. And I know there is also apparent rumors about some disagreements between Yuke's and Kenny Omega.
And apparently Yuke's is trying to take advantage of old Kenny Omega. I don't know anything about building games, so let me just say this. So I literally have no comment. I'm on the side of the video game and AEW more than anything. So I'm like, I literally could not tell you the first thing about programming and building a video game. So like when I heard that there was an issue, I was like, you know what? I would have to learn a lot just
from what I've seen, at least from the rumors on that regard, is that Kenny Omega is just like the way that he's seen it. And of course, he has it in his mind what he wants the game to be, but he's not a developer. So I'm sure there's going to be butting heads on that. Like, people are probably going to be like, why is Kenny Omega even involved so heavily in this process? He's not a video game developer. He's a video game player. And that might be something that Yuke doesn't like. It's like a guy from the company that's just like always checking up and always doing all this kind of stuff, but at the same time you don't have a release date, so it's not like you're like being rushed right now, so like we don't even know when this game's coming out yet still.
There's but also not too many people that know more about video games, and I'm not just talking like than Kenny Omega. Like he doesn't just know like, oh, what games are the best? He like knows how the engines work, who designs them, and stuff like that. So, it's like, does he know how to build a video game? Probably not, but he does know about video games. So.
And the other thing that I've seen too is the fact that apparently Yuke's is possibly trying to get a multi-game deal with AEW, trying to like work that in. Whereas AEW has been looking at the video game for Fight Forever and is as a one and done. Which is why that they were willing to possibly upgrade their listed. They were saying that they were going to have like 50 wrestlers on the roster, and they would add more and more with DLC. But Yuke seemingly wants to have a multi-game deal with them to continue to make games for AEW, whereas AEW seems to be like, nope, just one. We just want one. So again, these relationships can change and all this type of stuff, and it's like it's not something that's like people leaving the game. It's not like Halo Infinite levels of like, oh shit's falling apart.
Absolutely. And that's the big thing with it, is that they want to see how the game does, and if it comes out and it sells a bunch of tickets, I mean sells a bunch of moves a bunch of units, I'm pretty sure they're going to be like, okay, let's go ahead and get another one out there. But if it comes out and it doesn't sell as well, and
like I said, I think they're just saying that they want the 1 year just to cover their bases in case the game isn't what they want it to be. Because, I mean, again, you're promising no mercy to these wrestling fans, and they're going to look at it and they're going to expect no mercy.
Absolutely. But I do want to throw this out there. When the time comes and the game comes out, we will be giving away a copy of the game on the show. So I am looking forward to that because I have not anticipated much other than FTR winning the tag team belts again. I think and Cody winning the WWE title. I think the
bringing back the Winged Eagle. Do it.
The number three on my list is this AEW video game. So it's very highly anticipated for me. I plan on spending a bit just really getting into the game and learning about it. So yeah. It's going to be fun.
And then we have one last headline I think we'll go through before we wrap this show up.
Yes, AEW finally announced its fan fest for Las Vegas. It is going to be Saturday. My computer just froze. Saturday, I believe March 27th. Am I saying the right date? No, March 28th.
March 28th.
At 10 p.m. from Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. So that's exciting. There's so many convention places in Las Vegas. I'm very excited to be seeing that show there. What you can expect is from a person that's literally been to all of them. I've been to every fan fest. So they are going to have their Jazzwares. They're going to have wrestlers in the ring talking. They're going to have a free section to get signings and autographs. You're going to have a chance to pay additional to get signings and autographs. And then apparently the BTE title is going to be defended at this. So even if you decide to just do the general admission, I believe those tickets are starting at $54. Just if you just decide, hey, I'm just going to do the general admission, that is definitely going to be worth the money. If you're there to do meet and greets, that'll be worth the money too. It's going to be a good time. Tickets go on sale today, technically, May 6th at noon Pacific time. That is, at 10 a.m. Pacific time. I said the wrong time. 10 a.m. Pacific time, which is noon Central and 1 p.m. Eastern. Am I right? Am I
saying that? You had it listed as 11 a.m. Central time, which would be noon Eastern time.
Noon Eastern time. There you go. I was like, the math. It's simple math. But when you're trying to just like talk as you go, and it gets very confusing. But yeah, I imagine general admission at Orlando sold out. So if you're even thinking about going, go ahead and pick up that general admission ticket when they go on sale. I will literally be in the movie, and at 11, I'm going to go over to the little section where it's away from everywhere. You can use your cell phone and buy my general admission ticket. Because like I said, I personally know that this can sell out, and then some people that I know that go to everything weren't able to get in to the fan fest last time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that will do it for this episode of All Things Elite. Thank you guys so much for being a part of this show and listening every single week. Please continue to download this fine podcast on Google or Apple Podcasts. And if you listen to us on Spotify or any other podcasting platforms, give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. Leave a rating and a review, and you can leave a donation through our podcast provider, Red Circle, on Twitter, as my cats are jumping all over the fucking place behind me. On Twitter, we are at ATElitePod, at Social Suplex, are the guys that make this show possible. Check out all the other shows they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowitz, SZUMOWICZ. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. And I'm going to go calm my cats down, but I'm going to let my good friend Floyd take us home on this episode of All Things Elite.
All right. So this week has been a lot of newsworthy week. Today, well, we started recording on Cinco de Mayo, went into May 6th. Oh, Revenge of the Sixth, if you're a Star Wars fan, so happy Star Wars Day. Cinco de Mayo, Revenge of the Sixth to everyone out there. Have an amazing weekend. Support your favorite wrestling companies, and make sure you watch Cody in his, first non-WrestleMania premium live event since he arrived in WWE this Sunday on WrestleMania Backlash. But with that, I will leave you. Be nice to people, and with all your heart, whether it is home, work, or school, always do your best to be elite.